Dr. Phil talks about his new book and his recent appearances, like the one on The View, where he helped the ladies escape Clown Town for a minute to see basic reality.
Is that you went to the southern border. Now, you're saying that you're going to give people facts. What did you take away from that experience, and what kind of reporting are you going to be bringing back from that experience?
I'll tell you a fact I took away. I talked to the head of all the border guards down there, the head of the union. I asked him straight up, kids are coming over the border with numbers written on them, phone numbers and addresses. Mm-hmm. Do we check those out? He said, well, we call them. Is it possible that we're sending them into known prostitution rings or sweatshops? He said, it's not possible. It is absolute.
And that's why today is a day of celebration. Dr. Phil is finally putting his cape on and entering the battlefield for the culture.
I'm a crime fighter.
And if Dr. Phil thinks we can change, then
everybody can change.
I'll talk about that and more today on Indie Thinker. Welcome to the show. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Did you know that Indie Thinker is right now in the process of filming a full feature documentary about the fatherlessness epidemic that we are experiencing in America right now? The breakdown of the nuclear family is statistically higher now than it has ever been, and I wanted to do something about that. So we are creating a film that will expose what is causing fatherlessness in America. Here's just a small snippet of the trailer. Long gone are the days of Andy Griffith, the ideal representation of a father on TV.
Your mother and I send you to college to get an education, not to party hardy.
And now, the fathers on TV look way more like Homer Simpson than they ever do Andy Griffith.
Now, what were we talking about, boy?
So how did we get here?
It's the rejection of the wisdom of the past.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Who is that guy so articulate, so profound, sitting with Dennis Prager? Well, of course, that was me. And after Dennis begged me to be in the film, I finally relented and said, fine, you can be in the film. Now, all jokes aside, there's a bunch of people like Dennis, high-profile thought leaders in our country that you need to hear from on this subject. So in order to see the full trailer and even to help financially support this film so that we can finish it, you need to subscribe to our newsletter. You can do that by going to the link on the screen, or you can go to the description of this podcast where you can access not only Indie Thinker Extras, but the newsletter that will help you see the full feature trailer to our documentary Fatherless and give you an opportunity to help support the great work that we're doing here at Indie Thinker. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times. Conservative media just makes me a little bit grouchy. I have to tune it out so I don't get consumed by it. My life is much more peaceful when I'm not listening to Indie Thinker and growing in my knowledge of cold hard facts and life-changing truth. I get it. Men are prone to tummy aches these days. We no longer put plows and swords in their hands, and we've become a little soft. Podcasts can be a little bit of effort at the end of the day. But put the remote down for just a moment and hear me on this, men. You are needed on the battlefield. The encroaching darkness of leftist idiocracy is not stopping to take a break. They don't have excuses. They have an agenda. So if Dr. Phil, who has a lot to lose, is willing to risk it all and take a stand for truth, then by God, what is stopping us? He's even willing to do it on the show of one of the slimier podcasters out there on the left. That's right. Dr. Phil goes on the David Pakman show, as we'll see today. And I think we can learn a little bit from Dr. Phil and how to stand for truth in an age of moral relativism. Let's jump into it.
You know, I'm very interested to speak to you today because in preparation for our interview, I've been watching some of the Fox News appearances, looking at the book, etc. I never really saw you as a guy who delved into political issues per se. You seem more willing, interested, and I must say, maybe more conservative than I thought you were. Is that a fair assessment?
Not at all.
Okay.
Because I am so not political, you can't even believe it. And I'll tell you why. I know nothing about politics. And I know why you say that. It sounds like it.
Right.
I talk about these things as cultural issues in from a psychological, psychosocial standpoint, how they affect families and people. And they do overlap with some of the things that politicians talk about, but they talk about it from a political standpoint, funding standpoint, how they can get this bill or that bill through, couldn't care less. But I am interested in those issues in terms of how they impact families in their day-to-day pursuit of life and peace and being able to raise their family in a healthy environment. So there's a lot of overlap, but I don't talk about it from a political standpoint because I frankly don't know enough about the politics of it all.
That's
I'm just willing to admit that. I'm just willing to admit it. I don't think a lot of other people know either. I'm just willing to admit it.
All right, so there we have it. David Pakman thinks it's a real burn to suggest that Dr. Phil is a conservative. Well, you sure seem to be a conservative, huh? Wolf in sheep's clothing, I suppose. Rather, what Dr. Phil is doing is realizing what everybody else in society is realizing today. They're awaking to the fact that the left and progressives have gone off the reservation. They're not even in left field. They're one flew over the cuckoo's nest at this point in time. They're absolutely insane. They're putting men in women's bathrooms. They're trying to get men to breastfeed babies. They're trying to not only chop off the body parts of young kids in gender clinics and then extorting you and saying they'll commit suicide if you don't let them do this, but they're also, of course, aborting babies in the hundreds of thousands each and every year in America. The left is off its rocker. I can probably come up with more euphemisms, but plenty for now. The point is that Dr. Phil is just using common sense. He's not being political. David Pakman is insufferably political. I mean, we're watching this strange shift from the left simply because of how far the left is going. We're seeing people like Bill Maher, Joe Rogan, and Dave Rubin leave the left because those people are insane. Now, the fact that David Pakman can't recognize that just shows us how far deep in the echo chamber he really is. I mean, even people like Jon Stewart are coming around to the realization that, boy, it's really hard to vote in America today because I would vote normally for the Democrat, but I mean, look at how freaking old Joe Biden is.
Look at this. I'm like 20 years younger than these. Look at this. They wish.
So again, this is more an issue of just simple common sense, and it's not political. But I get the same thing from a religious standpoint. There are many Christians still to this day who think, well, Christians shouldn't be political. You know, they shouldn't talk about this. They should only just focus on the gospel. They should only focus on Jesus. Well, if you're a person of morals and values, you cannot help but actually talk about political things. Now, I'm not talking about shilling for one side of the aisle or another. I'm just saying about, let's be honest. Let's take some religious moral stock of our lives and realize if we're going to take biblical positions on certain issues, you're going to find yourself siding with the right more and more and more in society today. And let's also be honest about this. When somebody accuses you of being political, let's just accuse them of believing in God, because the reality is that the conversations that we're having today really aren't political in nature. We left that a long time ago. We're not talking about budgets and fiscal responsibility and big businesses, not really. What we're actually talking about is the morals of whether or not we should abort hundreds of thousands of babies each year in America. We're talking about the morals of marching young children into gender clinics. We're having conversations right now about culture and not just political affiliation. Now, by the way, if you're going to have that conversation, you may have to side with one party or another, but more importantly, just be intellectually honest about where that leads you. And if we're going to be really gut level honest, let's make a statement of fact here. Whether you know it or not, you believe in God, especially if you live in the West. And if you're going to have a conversation of anything of any moral value whatsoever, if you're going to have a conversation about culture, you're going to eventually come to the conversation of truth. And you cannot have a conversation about truth without having an explicitly religious conversation. See, I think this is the mistake Pakman is making, is that when we have conversations about truth, we are inherently making religious statements, not political statements. So we're talking about whether or not there is a transcendent set of values that are bigger than us, or is there just merely our arbitrary whims, our personal desires, our appetites, and you do you kind of thinking. If we push that moral relativism to the side and we acknowledge that truth and reality exists, then we're going to have to posit that there is transcendent moral values, right and wrong, that are outside of us. Let me give you the example here. Within the context of Nazi Germany, just to use a hackneyed example, Nazi Germany believed that certain things were right and wrong. regardless of what they believed in that temporal moment, they were wrong about what they were doing to the Jews, because it is wrong to murder anybody in cold blood always. Why? Because there is a transcendent set of moral values, whether you want to believe it or not. In other words, if morality exists, then truth exists. And if truth exists, moral law exists. And if moral law exists, then you're going to have to ask the question, who created the moral law? So inevitably, you're going to have a conversation outside of postmodernism and fully into the religious sphere, because truth presupposes an objective standard. In other words, truth presupposes God. Religious thought is embedded so deeply in everything that we're discussing right now, especially in the realm of truth and whether it exists, especially in the West, that we have to acknowledge that really right now we're not having a political conversation, we're having a religious conversation. Now, most people who hate God and love atheism, like David Pakman, are going to try to ignore that as much as possible. But if you're wise enough, like Thomas Aquinas, you'll realize a just law is a human law that comes from divine law. All right, let's jump into the next clip.
They get suspended, they get disciplined, and in a sense, canceled at that point.
You know, that's interesting. Let me weigh in on that a little bit, because that's very interesting. You know, in preparation for the interview, I looked at the academic setting, because a lot of times when we talk about cancellation, we talk about, a comedian who said or did something, and then for a while they didn't have shows or something like that. You know, Louis C.K., for example, et cetera. I looked for the revocation of tenure for professors in a lot of these schools that you talk about or allude to. And really, it seems that when tenure is being stripped, it's for real wrongdoing. Plagiarism is uncovered, sexual harassment of students, etc. I really struggle to find evidence in a country of 330 million people of tenure being stripped just because of using the wrong language. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't wacky memos that go out, or I'm with you that this stuff exists anecdotally. But if we think about what is happening big picture, I actually struggle to really find examples of this as an epidemic. Tell me where I may be missing something.
Well, I don't know what you mean by epidemic.
Well, that it's happening, that professors are being stripped of tenure, not for serious violations of their like I said, sexual harassment, plagiarism, being involved in criminality, but just because they said something that is maybe not politically correct. I'm just not seeing that tenure is being stripped from professors for that. Do you have any examples of professors that have lost tenure in that way?
I do, and I'll provide it to you. How's that? I'll get you a list and send it to you.
I would love to do that, because if that is happening, I want to expose that, and I want to talk about that.
All right, so there you have it from David Pakman. Cancel culture largely doesn't exist because conservative professors are not losing tenure in the academy. Now, before I kind of dig into how absurd that argument is, let me just say that essentially we're seeing a version of the dishonest argumentation of the left. Very often this looks like this. They'll say, this isn't happening. And then when you show them that it is happening, they'll say, well, it's only happening just a little bit. And then when you say, no, that's not actually true, they'll finally say, well, who are you to shove your morality down my throat? And it's not a big deal in the first place, even if it is happening. And so you see this kind of disingenuous argumentation so very often on the left, and you need to be ready for it. Now, another thing that you'll also see when you actually talk to people about this, which I highly encourage you to do so, because it's the only way to expose darkness to the light, you'll also get reductio ad absurdum arguments like you got here from Pakman, saying, well, tenure is not being lost by professors largely, and there's really no statistical basis for that argument. Therefore, cancel culture doesn't really exist. There's no epidemic of conservative professors losing their tenure, so it must not exist. Well, that is a false argument in a number of different ways. First of all, what does he mean by epidemic? Dr. Phil was right to question that. And why does he think that losing tenure is the only way to show that people are being canceled in the academy? Right off the top of my head, I'll go ahead and give you two examples since you wanted it, Pac-Man. Roland Fryer, who is probably, I think is safe to say, not a conservative professor, happened to make the mistake of releasing a very robust study with independent investigations that corroborated the same evidence over and over again, that there is no evidence of systemic police violence against black people in police departments anywhere in America. Now, Roland Fryer at Harvard released that evidence and that study, not caring about the results, and strangely, shortly thereafter, there were allegations of a sexual nature made against Roland Fryer. And then you have another guy in Iowa State University named Guillermo Gonzalez. Now, he had the misfortune of producing an intellectually robust study that showed that the privileged place of our planet almost begs you to come to the conclusion that our universe is designed by a creator. Now, when he produced his book, Privileged Planet, he was immediately blackballed and mocked by his colleagues. The Iowa State University created a statement that said that nobody in the science department believes in intelligent design and forced all of the people in the department to try to sign that. And then, shortly thereafter, the school denied Guillermo Gonzalez tenure, didn't strip him of it, but denied him tenure. And of course, the school came out and said, this has nothing to do with the fact that Guillermo Gonzalez is a conservative Christian, and then producing results that actually lead people to conclusive evidence for the existence of God. This just has to do with the fact that we just don't think that he is intellectually fit for the academy, of course. So as you can see there, there are other ways to get rid of professors rather than to just merely strip them of tenure. There are ways to blackball them in their community and make them irrelevant without simply stripping them of tenure. And that is happening much more widely than we can possibly think. And besides, when did we come to the conclusion that people in the academy need to strip their associates of tenure the moment they come out with conservative positions? People will get sued for that, so of course they're going to cover up their desire to cancel conservative professors and not come right out and tell them we're stripping them of tenure because they're conservative. How foolish of Pac-Man to actually think that this is a legitimate argument. I mean, this is like the Joe Biden-China thing. We think that Joe Biden has to march over to China, glad hand with Xi Jinping, and then take stacks of cash back home in order to be guilty of doing something wrong. No, that's stupid. Since when did breaking the law look anything like that? People find all sorts of ways around the law to break the law. So come on, man. You would have to be naive to the point of totally dishonest to think that the academy is not largely run by people on the left and that conservatives have very small place in the modern day academy today.
Couple other things that I wanted to ask you about. When it comes to what you see happening in the political space right now, approaching it from a cultural perspective, as you say that you do, do you agree that a decline in religiosity is a problem in the United States, or is that not a concern to you?
It is a concern to me. I think we've seen church membership drop below the 50% mark. Mm-hmm. For the first time in our country's history. And I think that that's a problem for a variety of reasons. And one of them being that that's one of the times that families tend to spend quality time together. Mm. It's time that they put their phones down. It's time that they usually got together and would go do something as a unit and focus on values that were constructive to the family. There was often meditation time involved. There was often discussions about what was discussed in church that day. They often had Sunday dinner together afterwards and spent quality time like they did no other time during the day. And I think it also is a product of our lessened birth rate, which has dropped because a lot of people join church when they have children because they want their child to be baptized or christened or whatever. And the fact that we've seen our birth rate drop to around 1.6 from 2.1, which is necessary to sustain our infrastructure right now, is a problem, and it seems that that's one of the main reasons that church membership has dropped off. There's fewer kids to go get baptized, christened, or whatever, so people have less reason to go to church. And that's a byproduct of the lesser birth rate.
What do you make of the correlation, anyway, that as church attendance has declined, which you rightly point out, the rate of violent crime and murder in the United States has also been declining? Do you think there's anything because a lot of times the claim is made that as you remove God, whether it's from school or whatever, bad things happen, crime rates go up, etc. But we continue to see violent crime rates decline in the United States, correlating with decreased church attendance. What do you make of that?
There you have it. Religion really doesn't matter to society. Of course, David Pakman would have no understanding of what that actually looks like, since he has grown up in a Christian society for his whole life. And we are just now post-Christian, so there actually isn't any statistics to talk about whether or not American crime rates will go down, or they won't be really bothered by the fact that we are becoming a post-Christian nation. There is no evidence to suggest that that is true at this point in time, because we are just now becoming a post-Christian nation where more people do not go to church than that do go to church on a regular basis. But honestly, I wouldn't expect a genuine argument to come from David Pakman on the subject of religion. Again, let me remind you, this is the guy that, when the Trans Covenant Christian shooter went into that school in Nashville and killed six people, immediately on X, he thought it would be wise to post, "Well, I guess those people weren't praying enough." I mean, this is the scuzz bucket that we're listening to right now, so it's no surprise that he's absolutely lying about multiple things. He's also lying about crime rates declining. Sure, they're declining right now, but simply because we had wild shifts in crime rates during 2020 and beyond. And we've been experiencing the highest rates of crime in America than ever before right now. And so, yes, there is a decline right now in crime rates, just simply because they've been so off the charts. And we're simply slowly but surely returning to a pre-pandemic crime rate, which is no great shakes. But I could actually argue the opposite here that David Pakman is arguing. And it doesn't take much to see this. Blue cities typically have lower religious rates, where people do not attend church as much in these blue cities. And statistically, per capita, they have the highest crime rates of any other cities in America. So the places where people attend church the less they commit crimes more. And you might say, Reed, that you're still correlating here things that we don't know is truly correlated. But let me just step back from the argument and at least tell you this. Everybody on the planet is religious, whether you like it or not. So it doesn't even matter if my blue city crime rate analogy is apropos, which I believe that it is anyway. But everyone truly is religious. Everybody has a belief system. Everybody has a worldview that shapes the way they act and what they do in the world. So let's not all treat religions as though they are the same. When we talk about a post-Christian nation, we're talking about something that is much different than just simply asking whether or not we need religion in society. The question is, do we need Christianity in society? So let's not treat all religions as equal, and let's get more to the point. Is being a post-Christian nation a problem? Well, statistically, yes, because especially evangelical Christians are the most giving people, not only in America, but on the planet, of their time and their resources. They are three times more giving than atheists. Surprise, surprise. So all the stats point to the fact that when you take out Christians from America, you have a much darker world. Besides, we can also statistically see as Christianity decreases, petty theft and carjackings are going up still in the present. Porn is increasing while the birth rate has dropped below replacement for the first time in a generation. You might want to pay attention to that. Abortion is eradicating humans. That could make a difference there. And right now, we're killing about 1 million babies each year in America alone. And by the way, only 3% of all abortions are performed for rape, incest, and supposed life of the mother, while the vast majority of abortions are being done by a small percentage of the population. Black women make up 14% of the population, but account for 47% of all abortions. Since Roe, 20 million black babies have been aborted, or more. You don't have to import illegals to change the demography of America. All you have to do is stop killing black people. The nuclear family has been ravaged by progressive policies. The U.S. has a 23% single-parent rate. 80% of those homes are led by single moms. The U.S. average is three times more than any other nation. Look at China, who has a 3% single parent rate, and India, who has a 4% single parent rate. Oh, and if you care, about 20% of white homes have no father, whereas about 70% of all black babies are born without a father. I could go on. But if you agree that those are concerning things in society, the eradication of the human species, the eradication of the nuclear family, and more, then we should ask ourselves what will solve that problem. Forgive me for stating the obvious here, but the pro-family, pro-life, pro-purity Christian faith couldn't do anything but help. But by all means, keep denying that because you blindly hate the Bible and its God. See where that leaves you and everyone else. That can't help but reproduce more of the same insanity that we're seeing right now. So maybe if Dr. Phil can fight effectively, and maybe not even that effectively, from a nominal Christian position, from a nominal conservative position, maybe those of us who know better, who care about virtue, who care about truth, beauty, and goodness in society can actually stand up for once and make a difference. That's up to you. It's up to me. Thanks so much for watching. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and to go with God.